What's the soonest after they do one operation they might go in and do another operation, or is there any restriction on time?
Not in, you're speaking to different areas, not the same area.
Well, yeah,
different areas. Yeah, there's it's still subject to the same reentry period as the THP. So, for example, let's say we broke that property into 10 units. The 786 acres, say there's 10 78-acre units, you could theoretically kind of domino those, and once every 10 years you'd come back and move through the property progressively. So there isn't a restriction on where you can jump.
Yeah, it does. But the 10 units, would that be covered by one NTM?
Well, that's what we've been exploring that a little bit as to, well, do we do a property-wide monitoring program on, you know, a property-wide waiver? Mm-hmm. The shortfall I see with that is that you're going to be fixed. I mean, I know that you can adjust the monitoring program, but the nice thing about doing it by notice is that you have conditions set in time exactly when you file that notice. The water quality can come out, take a look at it at that single point in time. You can take photos at that single point in time, and it's just more specific to that operation and gives you more specific information about the site versus kind of this broad brush thing, which is, you know, which you'd have to file once every, you know, 5 years for an unknown area, basically.
Well, I mean, I guess my concern is that every time they go in, then we need to do another.
I understand what you're saying, and I think there's a few things that
I think we should do that.
It's something we should explore. I agree. I think there should be some baseline information, whether it be temperature or turbidity. And the turbidity thing, as you'll find out on these photographs, is a very difficult thing to assess in at least the Green Valley watershed. But there may be a few specific things that we cling to and say these are permanent deals that we always want to monitor.
That's fine, yeah. I just want to make sure that every time they go into do a new operation,
yeah,
a reentry, that we do a new.
So long as we're still doing this, yeah. Forever into the future, this type of protocol. Hopefully, it gets a little simpler. So I'm just going to begin with a slideshow that basically takes you up. If you can cast back a little bit, there's Green Valley Creek that runs up the what would have been the left side. If Bill had that photo, it would have been a little easier. But Green Valley Creek runs into the property and borders it on the west side of the property for almost a mile, and Green Valley Road is there as well. And then Wilson Creek, which is the unit that we're entering, spurs off of that. And we had one photo point at the confluence there, which I'll show you on this slide, on the slideshow as well. And I think the point of this slideshow is to just give you a sense of the watershed that we're dealing with and just some of the problems with trying to monitor in a watershed of this with stability like this. So I'm going to go ahead. This is Green Valley Creek. There it is. It's magnificent. That is Green Valley Creek, and that's the low part of Green Valley Creek. That's after the whole ranch, well, the whole southern end of the ranch has drained into Green Valley Creek. You know, and it's inside, you know, this is a public road right here. It's a county road that runs along it, and this thing's got algae and all. It's probably very warm water. It's just unshaded completely. The sun comes from the south side, and there's my little truck, and it goes along this edge for maybe 600-800 feet, wide open, and there's tires and, you know, all sorts of stuff in there. In fact, right downstream, it blew out a couple of years ago. this is a little further up there. You can see that there's a little bit of water at this point in Green Valley Creek, and then there's one of Estrada's one of their other draws that comes out of their property on the right side of the photo there, and then Green Valley Creek continues on up to the left. So this is kind of the confluence of one of the other draws in the...
Is that class two right there?
That's a class one. They actually have a little trout. Right now, currently, you'll see just upstream from this, Green Valley Creek is completely dry. There's no water in it. So at this point, there's no real sense in even doing temperature monitoring in there when there isn't any water to monitor. I mean, it's a pretty, and this is before the creek actually gets degraded, which is further downstream when it runs through Watsonville and all the ag land below the ranch. I mean, this is the good, and in fact, that road section was the good portion of Green Valley Creek. That's a little bit further up, just before it dries, heading up Green Valley Creek, just a picture. This is showing Green Valley Creek as it is right now, which is dry. And that's in, you know, it's been dry for a couple of weeks. It dries up kind of late June, early July, pretty typical for that creek. this is looking down off of Green Valley, Hazeldale Road at that point, and it's right along the San Andreas Fault. There's probably I counted maybe 50 slides that came in from the edge of the bank, and this thing is constantly just massive. I mean, you talk about the 1 cubic yard of natural sources. This thing is pumping hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cubic yards during each of these storm events. Massive amounts of sediment moving through this thing, and you know we're talking about photo point monitoring, like Bill was saying, these little itty bitty class threes that we're trying to mitigate, and we've got, you know, hundreds of cubic yards downstream. And it's not that it's not worth it. I'm just saying what I was getting at with Bill and trying to kind of pare down these photos a little bit was, let's look at ones that are important. And I think we need to do that. Just another photo of some of the slide activity that's coming down. And this is all natural. It's just, this is how the creek is moving down into that system. Again, this is actually the county road. You can't pick it out very well, but there's an abutment right here. The county had an abutment here and an abutment here, and everything between here and here is all, that's all fill that is washed down into Green Valley Creek, basically. And there's some trash and junk and, you know, public nuisance stuff. There's another great fix. I'm not pointing this out to bag on the county, but it's just a reality of this particular watershed. There's just, it's active, and there's all sorts of county roads in it, and there's private roads in it that are dumping all sorts of, I mean, this is a fix. But again, here's the old abutment. Here's one of the abutments here. This whole chunk of fill went right into that creek.
Is this on the timber harvest property?
This is actually, the Strata property is over here. This is the public road. Green Valley is actually a property line.
Is any of the stuff we've seen on?
We're headed up into it. I just wanted to give you a sense of the watershed. So we'll move on. This is a shotgun culvert on the county road, and there's probably 50 of them as we move up. And these are just pictures of slides and shotgun culverts all the way along that road. And this is only a mile of it. It's there's some of the water that's, you know, turbidity in July, you know, right below one of the culvert outlets. This is going to be a permanent photo monitoring point that we were talking about. This is the confluence of Green Valley, and then this is Wilson Creek that comes in right here. There's a little bit of water coming out, and it turns that way. So per your request, we're going to go ahead and keep this as a permanent photo monitoring point for better or worse. We're basically going to see how that confluence might change over time and if there's any significance in reviewing that over time. This is heading up Wilson Creek, kind of a nice little draw. Mr. Daniels, you were asking about the Class 1. We have established on both sides of this 100-foot buffer. We're not taking out any of these trees. This is just kind of the corridor along, and only the first part of Wilson Creek is a Class 1. And you kind of look at that and say, well, how's that a Class 1? Well, there's little pools here and there that I've actually seen small fish in, and then it stops and it dries up. So it doesn't become a Class 1 anymore. That's what defines it. You know, some large woody debris recruitment going up Wilson Creek. This is, in fact, the harvest area borders each side of this. The original map picture that was shown doesn't show the corridors on either side of here, but this is in fact just a no-cut zone within the harvest area. As you're moving up, this is just a little pool in Wilson Creek. It's nice habitat, really. I mean, compared to what you were looking at in the lower stem, this is actually a ford crossing that's not part of the harvest plan, but it's a ranch road, and they've received RCD in complement with RCD. They're putting in a little check log there, and they're really progressive landowners. They're really, after doing the right thing, they're great stewards. And this is just, you know, as nice as this ford crossing is, they're actually going to do some improvements to it to make sure that it's not raveling any. This is just a landing that's outside the WLPZ. This is probably the Class 1 WLPZ. This is probably 300 feet from the creek, which is over here, and all these trees are there. And that's just kind of a typical upland shot of the Estrada Ranch. Moving on, these are standard kind of ranch roads, very outsloped, rolling dips all the way along here. This one turns and kind of winds down into what I'll show you in a minute, which is one of the Humboldt crossings. And just, you know, they're excellent stewards, and we will be monitoring the roads, as you saw, Mr. Shawcross, the roads, trails, landings. We'll be walking these as part of the harvest. This is right at a Humboldt crossing, looking downstream from the crossing. This is a little side branch of Wilson Creek. It's a Class 3. There isn't any water in it except for after pretty significant storm events, maybe 3-inch storm events you might see, and then in a couple weeks after that it's gone. But you'll see it run here. There's actually getting to a landing, which is on the opposite side of the creek there. This is the kind of the before picture. I think that's even looking. That's actually looking upstream from the crossing. I'll show you the before picture here. Yeah. So there's this was a Humboldt crossing before, and then there's a landing on the other side of here. They had this culvert in there and logs on top of it. It may have been a wet year. I don't know why they had the culvert in there, but the culvert was in there, and they made them pull it as part of the project, so there wasn't a potential for any failure. And so this was a permanent one. They had them pull this back in '86, I think it was. And so we're gonna put a Humboldt crossing. We'll put logs in here, straw over the top of it, skiff of dirt, and then when we're done, we'll skip the dirt off, pull the straw, pull the logs, and probably this bank is failing a little bit. So we're gonna have a before. This is the before picture that you're looking at right now. We'll install the crossing and show you an after picture. And the common sense thing would be to lay this bank back. Would actually be to taper it back a little bit so it didn't have any steep walls that might contribute sediment to it. It's not going to look like this, but it's probably going to be safer in terms of erosion potential, in terms of introducing sediment into that system. It's not going to look just like this, but this bank won't be caving off and this bank won't be caving off. So it's probably a little longer than you guys wanted, but this is a rolling dip, standard rolling dip in a road. Just so you've seen it, very typical ranch road out here, goes through the oaks. Redwoods are over here. Rolling dip. No water gets by that thing. It's a permanent drainage feature that almost doesn't need maintenance. The Estradas walk their roads every single storm anyway. But the fact is, this thing just drains itself. You know, it's pretty erosion proof. This is one of the photo monitoring points. There's a little intergorge slide. This is actually out of the harvest area, but we chose to include it because it was in an unstable area, and it's the only one that we could really find that was significant. So we're going to monitor this over time. You know, you might see after one winter that this thing has actually slumped a little bit onto the road, and we can show you that there are slides in these forested settings. This is one of the upper drain. These are pretty steeply incised little class 3 drainages, pretty typical little class 3 drainage with some debris and stuff. And these generate sediment. They're incised and downcutting, and that's kind of part of the role of significant rainfall events in this area. This is very typical upland part of this site. And when we say medium or moderate or low risk type of sites, this is what we're talking about. We're up in these upland areas, grassy, you know, lots of trees still growing, but just there's not any water courses within 600 or 800 feet of this area. So there's very little potential for delivery of sediment unless there's just not, you know, with the current stuff that's in place, the foresters watching it, CDF watching it, the landowners watching it. If there were an event, you would see it. You would see a rill in the road that may have skipped one water bar, but it didn't skip the next one. And that's just another shot of the roads and looking out into the forest. And this was just kind of a closing shot, which is these things are expensive. And having me come up here and represent the landowner may not seem like an expense to you guys, but it is. All the stuff that we have to prepare and all the back and forth thing about negotiating this and negotiating that and photo points and keeping albums and doing it for 5 years and all that. So it's very expensive. And the Estradas have a beautiful piece of property. And if a lot of these landowners are actually forced out of doing business, which I think Jody and the crew would love to see happen, is nobody cutting trees anywhere in Santa Cruz County, you're going to get forced into development. And this, you know, this place is they've considered it. You know, it's a sad tragedy that a lot of these places might happen.
Do you have any pictures of the crossings that you're recommending be deleted from photo point?
No, I don't. And I'm happy to go out with Bill and look at these. And I have nothing to hide. I'm out here, you know, making sure that what we're doing is reasonable. And when I say small little water courses, I'm talking little itty bitty things that nobody's really going to look at after that. They're going to say, oh, well, there's that little water course. We'll look at it again in 10 years, and oh, there's that little water course. It's not going to change significantly, so I just wanted it to be a reason.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Any questions? Okay.
I want to get out of here. All right.
Thank you, Mrs. Fradiani.
Yes, Jody Frediani, and I'm just going to ignore that last comment. I hadn't intended to respond to this NTMP, but I need to speak about two issues here, and one has to do with process, and the other has to do with the content of the changes that were just made available to us today. And this is a process. We've been trying our best to participate in the process. We were told that we needed to get our comments in on the monitoring program by May 23rd. My understanding is that was also the same time frame for the foresters to get their comments in. What I see today is Forester got their comments in asking for all these changes on June 17th, but we didn't see any of that until this afternoon. None of that was made available to us. So we have been seriously challenged by this process, and I don't think that's appropriate given that this is a public process and there are noticing issues, and I hope that this is corrected in the future. About specific changes, I think that the term significant, as it's been put in here, also needs to be changed to noticeably. Significant is clearly exceptionally vague. Additionally, photo points, I don't believe they should be limited to currently existing landslides. You know, as we see, it's very unstable, and I do take exception to the term natural since this whole area was clear-cut. It's also riddled with roads and culverts, and I don't just mean this property, but the Santa Cruz Mountains, and all of those factors change the stream channel configuration. Large wood's been taken out of streams, so we don't have a natural system. We have a very affected system by our past activities. But I think that we need to reinstate the language that photo points include other landslides that should occur within the monitoring period of the waiver. Photo points need to be taken prior to the first rain, or photos taken prior to the first rain and not after, because you can have significant changes happening after that rain and you need a base picture. Additionally, I think we need to go back to the one cubic yard and not change that figure. And if it's significant, it's significant, and it needs to be there across the board, not just for those that have to do with, I think it's infrastructure timber. I don't even know what that term means, but I think that we're looking at cumulative effects on a piece of land and all of the effects that take place there. I mean, we should be looking at more than that piece of land, and in fact what we're looking at here is a portion of a major, an 1176 acre project, which is the size of the whole NTMP. And if I might, may I respond to the question about an NTMP and how that differs?
Sure.
Like that, thank you. In addition to the information you heard, an NTMP is it requires an extra document to be prepared, a management plan by the land, by the forester hired by the landowner, which talks about you know, some of the things that Mr. Vaughn was talking about in terms of what their overall plan is and how they intend to, you know, have it sustained yield, et cetera. However, the plan can be exceptionally large and is ordinarily much larger than individual timber harvest plans, which is the benefit to the timberland owner. So in this case, we've never seen in this county in the 25 years I've been involved an 1,100 or 1,200 acre timber harvest plan. Timber harvest plans themselves tend to be 300 acres or less. The amount of field review that takes place on an 1,100 acre, 1,200 acre plan is not comparable to that for a 300 acre plan. I mean, they don't spend 5 days or 6 days in the field. And once that NTMP is approved, it's good forever, so it can never be rescinded. And there's no further agency review other than perhaps your staff person now that we have the waiver process. Prior to initiation of these individual operations. So there's no further opportunity for the public to participate. There's no further opportunity for the other agencies other than the field inspections the CDF will make once operations begin. So when we say forever, you know, this one was approved in 98. We had one earlier today approved in 96. You know, they submit that notice and they can go out and begin harvesting as soon as they get their waiver, or as we saw today, before they get their waiver. So that's what I wanted to say. Okay. And my comments from earlier today about NTMPs apply to this as well.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Any board questions?
I think this, maybe we could address your concerns about the, I think that the deadline for getting comments in is more for the board's benefit, so that the staff can get copies of that stuff to us in a timely manner. If it were the case that only comments that came in before that time could be taken into consideration, then we might as well not have a public hearing. I mean, we make changes all the time based on people coming up and talking minutes before we vote. So that's really that deadline isn't, I don't think it's a legal deadline. It's just for the benefit of the board so that we can have the material and review it in a timely fashion.
Yeah, I think when the waivers go out, staff request comments by a particular date. I think that's what the May 23rd date was, so that they can prepare the agenda package in time. But the agenda notice itself permits comments to be received until Wednesday of last week and still be included in the board package, and then even later comments than that, there's a process for.
I think we need to do a better job of communicating that, because I've heard that complaint a lot, that, you know, people are having to submit things so far in advance that, and then, you know, things are changing after they submit their comments. And I think it needs to be communicated, you know, when things can get in and reach us in, you know, a reasonable time.
Isn't there also an issue in terms of the significance of a proposed change as far as whether it's within the scope of what's discussed in the staff report?
Right. If we make a change that's really significant after the agenda notice goes out, which is 10 days before the meeting, then we need to renotice the item for a future meeting, because there's a due process issue if the changes are too significant. And examples that are sometimes given are for a waste discharge permit. If it's noticed that effluent's going to be discharging into Aquifer X, and somebody, you know, at the meeting, a change is made to discharge into Aquifer Y, then there would be stakeholders in Aquifer Y that didn't know that they needed to come to the meeting to protect their interests. So that would have to be renoticed. But relatively minor changes in monitoring or other requirements don't require renoticing.
Right. You know, you are at a disadvantage because you are reacting and responding to what
I
is
am,
being
but
proposed.
There are other people who are not here who might very well respond if they knew that there were changes that had been proposed and made available to us today.
You know, those people should, you know, if they, that could happen with any agenda item. That's just what happens. And so we take information right here and make changes. And you might not have any idea that that's going to happen. So if someone has an interest in an agenda item, they got to show up.
I do understand that. On the other hand, the changes made by the forester or recommended by the forester, which makes this, you know, were submitted on June 17th. And I actually only have one page of about five pages. I haven't even seen the rest of the pages. They weren't included in the supplemental
sheet. The forester, though, the party that's going to be permitted could make changes right here, and we could discuss them. And
ask,
it would be
ask
okay.
For changes.
Ask for changes, and you'd have no idea.
Don't you think it's appropriate if comments are being? I mean, I guess I'm having a hard time with, and I'm not trying to be obstructionist at all. I'm just trying to understand the process. And I'll say I've spent, you know, 20 years working with the Board of Forestry and CDF, and I understand their process. And for all the things I disagree about, there's a clear process, and it's not changing. In this case, I know I submitted comments for a previous hearing, and those were emailed out to everyone in the timber industry. This time, there are comments from the timber industry, and not only were they not emailed to interested parties who are participating in this, they're not even available to me now. They're not part of the you know, it's obviously an error, but there's only one page of a five-page document that's been included. So I would feel that this was a process that was inclusive if the same rules applied to all participants in the process. That's all I'm asking for. And I'm asking, you know, so that if my comments, you know, are going to show up at the tail end and everybody's on the same playing field and we all have to scramble to see what it was that I had to say, and that's the way, you know, the board wants to do it, so be it. But if my comments are going to be sent out so that other people can respond in time, I would like to have other comments be made available to me so I have the same opportunity and we're working on the same playing field.
Okay, thank you.
My comment to that is that the forester is here representing the applicant, and that's a different situation than you as a citizen responding to a permit or a THP or whatever it happens to be. And that's why we have public hearings, because sometimes there are changes at the last minute. There may be changes because of the request of this board. And sometimes the applicant agrees with us, sometimes they don't agree with us. But that's why we have this public process. I understand if you want us to be able to look at response, yes, we'd like to see yours ahead of time or anybody else. We'd like to see the applicants, and of course, when they apply for a permit, that's what we see is what the staff's putting together for that particular project. The applicant can make request changes, whether they're going to get it or not, that's something else. And if it was all done by paper, then there would be no reason for any public hearings, would there? It would all be done. You could respond to his, he could respond to yours, and that would be the end of it. So that's why we have this public forum, so you can come and respond to any changes that are made.
Well, I'd like to say two things about that. One is that you've, and I was here for a large portion of your hearing yesterday. You've had this agricultural waiver stakeholder process going on where the all stakeholders were involved in the process of developing the monitoring. What I see happening here is that the timber industry is basically developing their own monitoring program, and if we members of the public want to participate, then we need to show up at the public hearing and read really quickly so that we can, with portions of the information, because as I said, I haven't even been provided with all of the information to respond after the fact, and I'm not quite sure why there's such a difference here that when it comes to ag waivers, there is a sense that the public has a right to participate in the development of the process, and yet when we're talking about timber waivers,
Let me just respond to that. The public does have a right to participate, but at what level, it all depends on the applicants. Mm-hmm. If the ag community didn't want the public to participate in their process, other than our workshops or other than our public hearings, and it wouldn't have happened. But the ag community was receptive to having other stakeholders participate, so they could come to some conclusion. Now, you folks out there need to work as stakeholders in timber harvest plans and work with these foresters and all these other property owners to be part of that process if you want that to happen. We can't force that.
We have done that over the years. In 1985, I sat on a task force. It was appointed by my county supervisor. It was industry and the public, and our task was to come up with a set of rules to the Board of Forestry that we all agreed upon. And we fulfilled that task, and they went to the Board of Forestry, and the timber industry lobbied against them. In 1995, I did the same thing. Again, members of the public sat on a task force appointed by the county. We had a negotiated settlement with a member of the timber industry and the environmental community sitting down, hoping to get a win-win project with our swing boat supervisor mediating that, and we came up with a proposal that we all agreed to. Not that we were all, happy with. There was concessions on all sides.
Absolutely.
And when we went to the Board of Forestry, that same timber industry member who participated in that settlement lobbied against the very package that we had all agreed to. I'm happy to do that. It's just that it hasn't been a successful process.
It takes
I'm concerned
two to tango.
When your board or when your staff has information from a month in advance and it's not made available to us to review.
Well, I don't know if that's the case or not, but
that's what happened here.
Okay.
So. Okay, Mr. Daniels.
I certainly agree that, you know, things can and do change in real time at the actual meetings, but that's not what we're talking about here now. We're talking about something that happened, you know, mid-June, so that's, you know, several weeks ago. And I think one of the issues is a level playing field. And some mention was made of email, and I think that's a good way to get information out. And I think there's been some sort of a email correspondence list for these kinds of issues. And there have been cases, as I understand, where, you know, complaints about a timber harvest plant has been sent out to the whole email list, and then in contrast, here is a complaint by a forester about a PHP that was kept in by staff until it got handed to us on July 9th and everyone else on July 9th. And so if we're to broadcast comments by one side to everyone so they can prepare for them and then not broadcast the comments by the other side, so that's not a level playing field. So yeah. We either need to stop broadcasting things at all, or we need to have this thing be a little more fair to both sides.
And Bill, why did that happen?
If my memory doesn't fail me here, I believe that was back when we were trying to propose a general waiver, and there was a letter that was raising some pretty aggressive legal issues, and I saw that as a fairly compelling document, and I did email it broadly to the foresters at the time because I was concerned that it appeared that it was possible that it was the start of a threat of a lawsuit to try to stop the waiver. That's the last time I've done that, by the way. I've been very selective about how I use email.
I think that's an unfair way to treat things.
Mm-hmm. No, in particular, at the time I acted maybe a little emotionally. I was kind of shocked by what I had saw, and so I did forward it to the foresters at that time.
Okay. Now, what about having information or proposed changes and not sharing that with the environmental community?
In this case, the supplemental sheets, I sent the changes to the individual foresters. And in this case, just to Bill Vaughn, and the other ones just the foresters involved. Again, because of all these complications of who do you email it to, and to be fair, there are several people who have asked to receive everything, and maybe we need to fine tune who is going to receive what, and maybe have a little stronger policy on that for these late emailed things like this.
I think we need to think about a particular case. One is the case where the forester has suggested changes to a permit, like this one, and a similarly complementary case where Ms. Ferdiani has sent in some suggested changes to a permit. And I think we need to treat those both the same. We need to either keep both a secret until they're published to the board and everybody else, or we need to put them on the email to everybody at the same time. We need to treat one set of comments differently than another is not fair.
Could I suggest that if you want to have a general discussion about what the process should be for public notice, you not do it in the context of this particular waiver? Because I think we're getting a little bit off track, and there hasn't been a vote yet on this waiver.
Okay.
Good idea. We have two more speakers.
Two more speakers. Can we take those, Dr. Press, and then Mr. Otten? Okay.
Chairman, members of the board, Steve Otten, RPF, Big Creek Lumber Company. I just wanted to point out that the Estrada family has an extensive history with Big Creek Lumber, in excess of 20 years, and Big Creek and their operations have taken part in a good portion of the road management associated with the Estrada property, and I just wanted to speak in support of the project that they're proposing to implement out there, and that Big Creek will definitely probably have some involvement with it too. And I've been on that property, and it's a very nice piece of property, as you saw from the photos.
How commonplace is that photograph with that Mr. Vaughn showed of the county road and the black tarp trying to hold back erosion or protect it from rainfall creating more erosion?
Your question is that type of photo where there's a creek alongside a county road, is that pretty common? Yeah. I mean, if you, there's a lot of, you know, the way the Santa Cruz Mountains are, sometimes the best place to put a road was right next to the water course because it had a floodplain or was the flattest spot. And a lot of times when you go on these timber harvest plans, you'll find most of the infrastructure is right there on the water course, and you spend a lot of time trying to get it back out to the ridge tops. So there's definitely evidence. And if you just look at a topo map and you look at the residences, it was kind of like the workshop that one of the geologists brought up and showed the amount of residents that are close to the water courses, and of course they are accompanied by roads. So there is some commonality with that, but in a lot of cases it was probably the best place at that time to build that road.
My question is, I guess at any one point in time, if we went out on the county's roads, we would see multiple instances of this type of active erosion?
I would say that you could readily find those type of instances. Yeah.
Well, if you're familiar with that area, and I am, Green Valley, Eureka Canyon, Hazeldale.
Yeah.
Tremendous rainfall up there. It's right on the San Andreas Fault. It runs right through the Estrada Ranch, and I think Estrada's probably fourth or fifth generations.
Yeah.
Run a real nice cattle ranch as well as the timbering over the years.
Yeah.
But it's very steep.
That's great.
In some areas, as some of the photographs that we saw. Tremendous rainfall there during the wintertime. It's nothing to have a 5 to 10 inch event in one night up there, and when it rains, it rains. And you ask about the erosion on the roads. That's the newest method with the tarps. Years ago, it could be abandoned cars, it could be ice boxes, it could be stoves. It could be just about anything trying to stop the erosion along the roads or any place else. And a lot of slides in that area. Hazeldale, Eureka Canyon, all those were sometimes during the wintertime are closed because of slides till the county gets in there to clean them up.
Yeah.
So it's a very sensitive area.
True. Mm-hmm. And I just stood up just to support the Estrada family because they're very good landowners.
Thank you. I would like to have Mr. Vaughn, if he would, wouldn't mind submitting those couple of photographs. Only of the road ones. If you could give it to staff, and it's not really Bill Arkfeld. I like it to go to Lisa McCann. Okay. Or you could submit it to Mr. Briggs, and he'll see that it gets to the right individual. But just as a follow-up, I'd like to include those photographs maybe in our TMDL discussion when it happens the next time for sedimentation in this area. I think we have the Pajaro Valley sedimentation TMDL coming up.
This is Pajaro River. Yeah.
Pajaro River. Okay, so maybe that's not in the Pajaro River, right?
But. Right.
Mr. Young, this stream that you saw was upstream of College Lake, and so any sediment coming down, it would end up in College Lake, and it's isolated from the Pajaro River issue of sedimentation.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair, I just have one request. Not only this particular project, but any in the future, and it bothers me that the staff hasn't visited the site since 98, which is approximately 6 years. And I think in the future that if we're going to consider these, I think we should have some recent visitation, that we have some up-to-date information, visual, photographs, or whatever, that we can consider instead of data that was approximately 6 years old.
Okay.
That would surely help me.
Mr. Daniels?
Yeah, in fact, just to second that, you know, a comment was made earlier about having baselines for our photo points, and I think that's an important thing to do, is we can't just do them after the rains. We have to have a before to compare against.
Let's have Mr. Berlage give us his comments, and we can discuss what we want to do with this.
Well, Chairman Young, it's with reluctance for the second time today I get up and talk about something I'd rather not have to, but I'm compelled to. I want to respond to something Ms. Frediani said regarding the Timber Technical Advisory Committee that she was a part of in the late 90s. I think it was 1999 or 98 and 99, and I was an alternate to that committee, and I was attended every single one of them except one, and I'm here to tell you that for her to say that there was some kind of a consensus as a result of that Timber Technical Advisory Committee is a bald-faced lie. And if you go to the public record of the Board of Supervisors of Santa Cruz County at their hearing in December of 1999, when they finally voted on the ordinances that were the, at least in part, the issue of that technical advisory committee, Supervisor Marty Wormout, who voted for the ordinances and with the positions of Ms. Frediani and the rest of her associates, stated at that point in time that there was absolutely no consensus. She was forced to do that because that was an egregious lie that had been perpetuated. I feel sorry for this board. You inherited our dirty little war, and it is a nasty war, and it's been going on for a long, long time, timber harvesting in the Santa Cruz Mountains and all the issues associated with it. I'd rather be someplace else. I'd rather be walking a classroom full of kids through Scott Creek and show them what we do for a living. But I have to be here, and I have to respond to stuff like that because we got 200 employees whose lives depend on having logs come to the mill, and that's affected by this board. But it's just sad.
Any comment, Mr. Burlage, related to this specific?
Yeah, to this
no.
THB?
Just simply to respond to the comment made earlier.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any other member of the public wish to comment at this time?
Thirty seconds.
Okay. 30 seconds.
Bill was mentioning, I think, in an optimistic way about the potential for Fish and Game and others to go out on these timber harvest inspections, but there's a joke going around that I'm sure some of you have heard. John Laird and Fred Keeley have made it that perhaps we should shut down the Department of Fish and Game because it's so bereft of staff people that it hardly exists anymore. So I don't want anybody here to be under the impression that there's going to be much oversight from them until that department is reconstructed. I'm on the county's Fish and Game Advisory Commission, and as Ms. Frediani is, and they're just not there anymore.
Okay, thank you. All right, that'll close public comment. Board deliberation. Unless, I guess...
Could we have the proposed changes back
yeah,
up?
Yeah, that's what we need.
Summarize the changes?
Yes.
No, can you just put them back up?
Sure.
While he's doing that, Mr. Briggs,
mm-hmm.
I would like to get Mr. Vaughn's photographs to Lisa McCann.
I've made a note of that.
Okay. And then maybe you and I can talk about that later, you know, with how, whether there's any follow-up necessary or how that fits
it's in two pages.
TMDL process.
Well, actually, what I wrote was for consideration on our work with the county on roads, roads
right,
corrections.
Right. Okay.
Am I to summarize the changes again?
Yes.
Okay. The changes we're proposing at this point I'll start with Section 3B of the Monitoring and Reporting Program, and this is the sediment release reporting. There's two changes there. We had changed it to 10 cubic yards. My logic was, well, we're changing it for Little Creek. They had some scientific validity to their argument. Nevertheless, it seems to be the board's will to keep it at one, so I'm going to recommend keeping it one as well. I had recommended changing over 100% to significantly. We were switching that to noticeably. On Section 1A, this is visual monitoring points. We're going to allow the RPF or his designated representative to do the visual monitoring points. Visual monitoring points will include a section of Wilson Creek, 500 feet of a water course that lies south of Landing A, landslide features near crossing X40 and X41. If feral pig activity, trespassing, or other, if feral pig activity or trespassing is causing erosion that could adversely impact water quality, these locations shall be mapped and recorded in the logbook as described in 3A. I'm removing the word photograph there. During active timber harvesting, tree felling, yard logging, and log hauling, the forester or LTO shall perform spot checks of water courses to evaluate if the particular activity is causing noticeable increases in turbidity in the water column. I apologize. I'm not sure I made that clear that that change was included. The idea here is if trucks are using a crossing as water is flowing, are they causing turbidity to increase during the dry season when they're hauling? My understanding is these creeks are all pretty much dry during the summer, but there's maybe a chance they won't be, and so we added that language. On Section 1B, photo points, we've changed it from the top and bottom of landslides, top and bottom of watercourses, and we've specified three Humboldt crossings. They're X23, 25, and 34, as well as the landings near crossing X40 and X41. I'm proposing to specify a photo point at Green Valley and Wilson Creeks. Let's see. I think the rest of that's minor. That we do establishment of photo points with PVC pipes as proposed by the forester. And then I added some language. In addition, temporary crossings X16, 23, 25, 34, and 42 shall be photographed before installation and after removal. Permanent crossings X37 and X38 shall be photographed before and after improvements are installed. I think that's it. The other changes, I believe, are minor.
Okay.
The other thing I would like to recommend would be to do a field inspection of the photo points to verify that basically we have them right, and that there's not others that should in fact be monitored. And let me add that when we do a photo point, this is intended to look for slow change over a long period of time. So we don't just automatically do every water course crossing. Every water course crossing is included in visual monitoring here.
I thought maybe photo point was to pick up abrupt changes because we're only there for 5 years. And photo points we're only doing sometimes for, two or three years on some of these THPs?
The abrupt changes are very visible, and you'll remember them. And so they'll be spotted. They'll be fixed right away. And really the point of photo point monitoring is that it's changing so slow that you don't even notice it. Like, you don't notice the tree growing in your front yard, but it in fact is growing. And with photo, a year ago, 10 years ago, you'll see the tree growing. And you won't even, notice it growing day to day. And so that's the kind of thing that I was trying to focus on when I recommended photo point.
And how soon could you get, this is what, July, so you can get out before the rainy, they can't harvest in the rainy season anyway.
I would like to suggest that I report back by December board meeting, the October board meeting being in Santa Barbara. That would also give me time to utilize the fall for the pre-wet weather work we've got to do all over.
When's this harvest planned to take place?
Subject to
Right. Okay. So it's this summer. Yeah. Okay.
But the photo points don't need to happen until after the harvesting is done.
All right. Dr. Bowker?
Yeah. I'm still not quite sure about how this non-industrial management plan works. So I would like to ensure that staff is notified when, I guess the word is entry occurs. In other words, if we're doing sequential logging operations. So at least we know who's in the woods and what are they doing.
We are notified. We get a notice of operations before they start to operate a new part of their NTMP each time. And it's, you know, a document.
But the same, if I understand.
Let me clarify. Let me ask for clarification. Is this a permit for the whole site or just for this cutting?
Just this cutting.
Okay. So if they do another cutting, they'll have to come back to us for another permit.
That's right.
Okay.
So this is a one-time only. It's not like you can take a tree a week kind of thing. You know what I'm saying?
You can't go into different areas.
Yeah, but not on this area. It's a one-time only cut.
I think they require 10 years of resting before they come back to this area again. So.
Okay, but it's a one-time cut.
Yeah.
Okay. And in 10 years, they do another one-time cut.
Gotcha.
And at that time, they go for another permit.
Right, for a different section of the
permit. No, for this section. No. I think the overall THP, right, is for a much broader area.
But not our permit.
Not our permit, right.
So if they want to go cut the next section next year, they'll have to come back for another permit and apply to that.
This is a one-time cut.
Yeah, but they've already got forestry's permit.
Sure, the forestry, that's their problem.
On the property.
Okay.
But for us, they'll have to come back for another permit.
Clearly.
Okay.
More clearly.
Mr. Daniels, any comments about staff's
recommendations?
I'm not sure I completely, not all of it's even written down here in the yellow sheet, so I'm not quite sure I completely understood it all. But it has some of the things I wanted, so I yes.
Dr. Press?
This particular plan was not transparent enough for me. I think there's, I'm going to register my disapproval because the process of noticing of changes for the meeting, the fact that our staff was not out there in person, and then the complexity of the site, it just doesn't it just isn't transparent and clear. I don't have any objection in principle to timber harvesting on this site, but I don't think that I understand or can understand after what's going on, or have much confidence in what's going on. So I'd rather see it done differently.
Any other board comments? I would be satisfied if staff has to go out before cutting takes place and do an inspection. And that's what he's proposing. And, I mean, that satisfies me if staff's going to be consulting with Mr. Adair and Mr. Briggs about what is appropriate to delete. I would trust their discretion, their judgment.
So we want to make that a condition of the...
Sure.
Yeah. And will the photo points be chosen at that time? Or?
Okay. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the primary intent.
I think this discretion and judgment rests with the executive officer anyway, but I would emphasize that that's what we would like to see happen. Mm-hmm. And then whatever
before any logging
takes place.
Okay.
And then based on that consultation, you can delete those photo points as you feel appropriate. Okay, I will entertain a motion if there's no other comments or questions. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. This may be difficult here. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Two ayes? All those, three ayes. All those opposed? One opposed?
Opposed.
Two opposed. You're going to abstain. Do I vote, Lori, anyway?
Yes, you vote, but...
After the, I vote after when there's a tie, right?
No. Yeah, you need a majority of those voting, and I don't know if the abstention causes that to drop to five, but I, let me just look it up.
Abstention goes with the majority.
I think that's right.
I've dealt with this, and according to our parliamentary procedure, it's considered I'm not present, so the vote is 3-2, and that's what passes. I dealt with it in my water district, and our attorney went and looked it up, and I went and looked it up, and it's very clear. In both Robert's Rules of Order...
We don't go by Robert's.
And the one we use, too. I also looked up that one. It's, what is it? The woman who wrote
Mrs.
this one.
Mrs. Fields.
So, yeah.
Cooking
Right.
Chocolate chip cookies or whatever.
Sturgis.
Sturgis, right.
The Harley-Davidson convention.
Yeah. Mrs. Sturgis.
An abstain is considered equivalent to being not present. So it's as if I wasn't here. So there are five people voting. Three voted yes, two voted no.
Anybody want to take any bets?
And while Lori is looking at that, Mr. Briggs, if you could then provide us an update in your, assuming this motion is passed, if you could provide an update in your EO report then to this THP and then the outcome of at the September meeting.
Okay.
Or October, whenever you have that information.
All right.
Right. Excuse me, Mr. Young, would you just clarify what you'd like to hear that EO report?
Well, just a brief update as to the results
of his inspection,
of Bill's inspection,
yeah.
And what your discussions with Mr. Briggs
would
result in terms of. What photo points are going to be deleted.
You bet.
May I respond to that? We have a pretty heavy agenda on September brewing, and most of those I have to go inspect as well.
October is fine, or November.
Okay.
But I just wanted, I want it to come back to us.
I probably can get it done by September, but I was just a little nervous about it happening.
You have to get there before they cut, but the report can be later.
Later. And the opportunities are the September 10th, October 22nd, or December 3rd.
And with all due respect, I think it's actually better if I go after they cut.
Okay.
Then I could see how they did and how well they prepared for wet weather at the same time and pick the photo points at the same time.
Well, that's an interesting thought.
It is.
Because pre-harvest, all you do is you see the forest with uncut. And
right. I'm not opposed to that.
Can I change my vote to no now?
You've abstained, Mr. Daniel. So.
Could I suggest that the that all the photo points remain until Bill gets out there? Right now, he's photo pointing all the crossings, correct?
No, not the way we recommended it. Now. There's a small. Well, I mean, let's be.
When is the
there are 13 or 14 crossings now,
okay.
And Mr. Vaughn was asking to eliminate six of them.
Okay.
Please keep in mind that the first time you would photo point is about November, December.
Anyway. Okay. Okay. So that I think that would be fine then.
Just keep them all in until Bill gets out there.
Exactly.
Well, I understood that part of this motion was that they happened before the harvest. So if you're changing this.
No, we're keeping them in.
But the photo, that the inspection happens before harvest.
No, the photo points are going to remain in all of them. Because the forester wouldn't be taking them anyway until about November.
But Mr. Daniels is talking about inspection of the site.
Right. I asked for a visual inspection prior to cutting.
Separate from the issue of photo points.
Right.
Okay.
you want to change that now, I think we need to have a...
No, I think we'll get out there before terms. Will that work?
That's fine. I just want a visual inspection to make sure that the staff was
okay.
Assured what was presented is correct. The photo points can be taken at the proper time.
So you were just suggesting that the September agenda is packed.
Yes.
Not as to your own scheduling to get out and look and do an inspection?
I know I have quite a bit of other field work to do between now and September.
Is it up here?
Yes.
Okay.
Most pre-harvest inspections take all day, so it's hard to do two in a day.
When you come up here, do you spend the night?
Yes, I do.
How many days in a row are you up here?
I only spend one night at a time. My family wouldn't be too happy if I stayed way longer than that. A couple nights a month, I travel up here.
Right. Okay. Are you able to get up here before they do their August cut?
Well, this starts to create the same dilemma why I missed this. Seeing this site before this meeting was just the schedule gets so filled up with the things that you have to do that some things have to get pushed back, and this in fact got pushed back because of other higher priority work. That's what I was trying to relate to you, that can we have some flexibility to do this inspection into the fall period where I think it's more productive for me to go and check post-harvest wet weather preparation at the same time that I verify where it should and should not be photo points. There should be no change to those photo point conditions before or after harvest. That doesn't affect the photo points.
Well, Mr. Jeffries, your concern is that, and others, that staff hasn't been there prior to.
My concern is that staff says they haven't been there for visual inspection since 1998. Mm-hmm. And my request is that he does a visual inspection prior to you start harvesting. The photo points could be at a later date. Or if you can do them and supply them, that's fine. Or he can point out the ones that he wants and you can do it and provide them. I don't care. All I care is about that there is some visual inspection, that the staff is assured when he looks at that, it's what he thought it was going to be and what was presented to the board. That's all I'm asking.
Okay. Sounds like you're going to have to reprioritize.
That's not a problem. Just to be clear with you, Mr. Jeffries, if I find something that's out of character, I'm not sure what it would be, but perhaps I do. Are we then suggesting that I bring this back to the board at the next board meeting then?
No, I would expect that you would, unless it's a major issue that would change the position of the board, and you are our representative, and I'm sure you would inform
Mr. Briggs
of the issue, and Mr. Briggs would inform the chair, and then the board would be informed.
Okay. No, I'm clear. That's fine. I can do that. Okay.
You're our representatives. You're our eyes out there to see these things.
If there's something that needs to be addressed, Mr. Briggs can respond to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In this particular case, I don't think you're going to find anything, just knowing the people that have the property.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mrs. Okun.
Mr. Daniels is correct. It's a majority of those voting, so the vote is 3-2.
Okay. Well, the motion carried.
One for you, Bruce.
Did we change anything in our...
It changed everything.
...very recent discussion with our very recent, our post-vote? No, we didn't. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
We are going to continue on because our chair has a long drive back to Santa Barbara, and I'm going to pick up the chair's position, and we will move on to and have a safe trip home, and everybody wave. I know you are. And we've been, us Northerns have been at the far end in the same position. We'll go on to item number 26, the City of Hollister, San Mateo County. We'll receive a report from Mr. Briggs, our staff. And it is a status report.
This is a status report. Written, Harvey, did you have anything to update?
We do have the new city manager of Hollister, which was a public works director. is here for to answer any questions. I would just say that I'm very happy that you're on schedule. I think you're doing the right thing. I'm still concerned about the dollars. I'm happy to see that you've changed the size of your capacity and the treatment. So I'm very happy with what you're doing there. Any other comments from the board?
Nope.
Thank you for sitting here all afternoon just for that. But I think that is a good report that you can take back to your city council.
I was telling Mr. Darren, my dad worked for the Forest Service too, and so I was the Forest Service for the Mountain West for 100 years. So this was actually fairly interesting.
I can mention that.
I look forward to the additional increase in the system being covered by the actions of the city. It clearly has increased in cost considerably, so
yes.
I'm looking forward to seeing how that's handled.
Thank you.
We'll go on to item number 27, military facilities update, and that is also staff report, unless there's some comments by the board.
That's right.
Item 28 is a report by regional board members. Is there any reports? None? Item number 29 is the executive's office report. Information, any items you want Roger to talk about?
I
abstain.
Yes. Go ahead, Roger.
Do I have to turn in a card? I guess it falls kind of under the heading of presentations and training by staff, because it takes some training to become a professional engineer. And I mentioned earlier when Jennifer Bidding was speaking,
yes,
that she passed her professional engineer's exam.
Right.
She's not the only one. Oh. And we have...
You made it too?
Yeah, finally. All these years, I keep trying every year. And four of our younger staff, I don't think they'd take offense at me labeling that way, took the exam at the same time. And so in addition to Jennifer Bidding, Martin Fletcher of our staff, Kimberly Gonzalez, and Matt Thompson all passed their professional engineers exam. So we were 4 for 4 this round.
Well, I, you know, pass on congratulations from us to them. We're very proud of them.
I'll do that. And Mr. Shawcross said there's a nasty rumor going around that there might be a budget on Monday. We don't know. But there's another rumor going around that...
What does he know?
The California Performance Review, is it called? The CPR. Yeah,
CPR.
Is going to come out as soon as the budget comes out. And there's conjecture in terms of some significant changes that would be recommended in there. And some of those would affect the regional board in a major way. From the standpoint of changing from, say, a 9-member board to perhaps a 7-member board, from changing from a 9-member board to a zero-member board, that would be turning the boards into more of a department similar to the Department of Toxic Substances Control. A change like that would require legislation, and, of course, that's not something that happens overnight, right, since the boards are established in the Water Code, Port of Cologne. So we're certainly interested to see what comes out of that, and my guess is that it'll be available online, but as soon as we get some information on the release of that report, we'll pass that along to you.
By my understanding, that report's either the thumbs up or thumbs down, and it's either accepted all the way or it's not accepted at all, and that has to be done by the legislation and the governor. Is that correct?
Well, I did not hear that it would be either all or nothing.
That's my understanding. And I did hear on the way over here this morning that they anticipate the budget would be passed the first part of the week. So, anyway. The only other thing, and I looked in your executive officer's report, and there's been a lot of talk about a potted desal plant at Duke. And if there's any information, I would hope that you would have that available for us.
And yeah, we don't really have any information. We had some inquiries from Duke in terms of how a desal plant might affect their permit, but they don't have a concrete proposal that they shared with us. Okay, so we don't have any information to share.
Well, there's a lot of stuff in the newspapers that says there is and so forth. So anyway.
We don't have any applications.
Okay. Any other items? If there's no further business, the meeting's adjourned.
Now, I pass our chair on the highway.
Yeah.